It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRack Sports. And I write for Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and allyoucanheat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRack Sports. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13. Just a reminder that today's show is sponsored by MyBookie, your hookup for all of your sports betting needs. Go to mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get a bonus on top of your first deposit.
Hope everyone had a happy Valentine's Day. Hope you had a happy Valentine's Day, David.
Likewise, Wes.
We didn't talk yesterday because we were, I'm assuming, you know, just being good people and doing the Valentine's Day thing that America makes us do. And now we're here on a Thursday afternoon with a delayed recap of the Heat's loss to the Philadelphia 76ers last night. No doubt one of the worst losses of the season. We're going to get to your Twitter questions about the game later on, as well as our spotlight performances. But David, now that you slept on it, the Heat blew a 24-point lead. What went wrong there?
Oh, I don't know. It was necessarily the lead is the big story, right? Because they had this what seemingly insurmountable margin of victory there, and they did everything possible to just let it slip through their hands. But I think the theme of the game, rewatching it today, was that they were playing badly all game long, and it just finally caught up to them. They weren't very active on the rebounding. They were giving up a lot of shot opportunities. They weren't falling for Philadelphia in the first half. And then in the second half, when they started getting warmed up, they finally did start falling. And I think that was the big difference. Miami's offense conversely cooled off in the second half. And I think that was the biggest problem. But I think it was just small problems that they were displaying throughout the first half. And it finally started to kind of snowball and catch up to them in the second half.
Yeah, you know, in that first half, you know, you make a good point there. For Miami, their shots were falling, and for Philadelphia, theirs weren't, and right. It just sort of flip-flopped right. In the second half. But Philadelphia, you're right, they outplayed Miami that entire game, and to sort of focus on that 24-point edge that they had would be sort of misdiagnosing the issue there. I mean, you talked about the rebounding issue. Philadelphia out-rebounded them 60-29.
Yeah,
that is a ginormous difference. And look, I am the last person to harp on rebounds. I mean, the big three won two titles and went to four straight finals without giving a damn about rebounding.
Right.
I don't care about rebounding.
No, rebounding is somewhat devalued in today's league, but it's also kind of an indicator of like overall effort. And I think that's what Philadelphia was much better at than Miami was. They just were chasing after these boards, blocking off people, getting in position, kind of sandwiching players there to get these boards. It meant a lot more to them than Miami. And maybe you can chalk that up to fatigue on the second night of a back-to-back.
Yeah.
But Philadelphia had something Miami clearly didn't.
Well, and it does go back to that last game where Miami got back into it late in against Toronto.
Right.
But it was a blowout at the start of the fourth quarter. And I wondered, look, Toronto's a really good team. The chances of coming back and winning this game are slim to none. And sure, the Heat kind of got climbed back in it, but they did ultimately lose. I wondered, you know, should Spoelstra have rested his starters a little bit more towards the end of that game? Because sometimes you just got to accept the loss and live to fight another day. Maybe he – look, and Miami doesn't have a long bench due to all the injuries that they're dealing with right now still.
Right.
But even still, like, do you play Dragic a little bit less and kind of live for that Philadelphia game and hope that, you know, one of those guys can sort of be, you know, a little bit fresher against the 76ers when you're going to need him to, specifically Dragic, who we'll talk about later, who had a good first half but sort of fell off in the second half.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if maybe that was a mistake that's both
made.
He's the only
Heat player to play over 30 minutes, 33 for the game, so that was pretty impressive.
Ellington had 31, but
oh,
yeah.
Sorry, you're right. Sorry,
But yeah, I mean, him and Dragic were the only ones to log that much time. And you know, I'm not going to say that Spoelstra should be letting go of the rope in any of these games. It's just not his style. The Heat play hard. That's sort of their identity here, and they're not going to walk away from that. But it is something interesting to think about, at least when you're in a back-to-back situation. But we don't want to harp on that. But back to the rebounding a little bit. I mean, you're right. Look, and Philadelphia's a good rebounding team. They've got a point guard who's almost 7 feet tall in Ben Simmons. They're long, they're a big, they're a physical, they're an active team. Brent Brown coaches them wonderfully and coaches them to hustle hard. But it resulted in Philadelphia taking 92 shots compared to 77 for the Heat. I mean, if that's the difference, and that's where rebounding for me at least gets really important, the difference in shots. If you're getting a bunch of rebounds, but you're roughly shooting the same amount per game, I don't have a problem with it. But 92 shots compared to 77, I don't know the last time a team won with that much shooting that fewer shots than their opponent. You know, that's insane.
Yeah, the Heat shot at a much higher percentage. Philadelphia missed 55 shots, but at the same time, they were just taking so many more opportunities. And eventually those translated in getting to the line and other, you know, made three-pointers that, like I said, weren't falling. So, I mean, you know, all you need is Marco Bellinelli and J.J. Redick to get hot from the perimeter, and all of a sudden you can close that seemingly insurmountable gap in a hurry, and that's exactly what they did.
That said, the Heat still had an opportunity at the end to win the game. Dwayne Wade's final shot. Look, they inbounded it to Wade after climbing back into it to make it a two-point game. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were trying to go for two at the end there. I think that they were on the inbound. Wade was coming off of a screen, but kind of slipped and fell, and that sort of delayed what his action was going to be. Rose up in front of Ben Simmons and took a straightaway three-pointer that almost went in. He said after the game, he's like, I would have bet all of my contracts on it that that shot was going in. It felt like it was going in. And it looked like it was going in, but unfortunately it didn't. And what Spoelstra said at the end also was, look, a tough break that didn't fall, but we didn't deserve to win that game anyway. But look, the Heat were in it and they couldn't. I think Dwayne Wade did have a chance. That was a good look, considering what the other Heat options for the Heat were, which was basically nothing. Nobody was really scoring at a high level or a high rate at the end of the game. And that's the maybe the advantage of having somebody like Dwayne Wade that even gets close, but it wasn't enough.
Yeah, it did look like a good shot, though. Unfortunately, you know, that spin move that he tried to get away from Simmons, create a little space there. He wound up a little too fast for his 36-year-old body to catch up with, and he wound up losing his footing, and that's why he took that longer three. But at the same time, like you said, it was a good shot. It looked like the rhythm was there. He had a chance to plant his feet and take a good shot. It's weird that they would go to him. That Goran Dragic was inbounding the ball at that play, and that Dwayne Wade was getting the call for him. I guess, you know, he is Dwayne Wade and what he means to this franchise. I wonder if that impacts how other players on the team see him. It didn't. I didn't get that sense afterwards, but you never know how that might trickle down. Goran's off to L.A. to be an all-star. The rest of the Heat have to kind of regroup and figure it out. It would have been nice to get a victory, even one that was – barely a victory had he made that shot. Unfortunately, now they've lost seven of their last games, I think, and they need to really kind of discover their identity again because they've lost it over the last few games.
Yep. So, look, we're going to get to your Twitter questions next. We have an interesting one about Miami's struggles at the end of games. But first, look, we don't talk about betting that much on the show. But we do provide a lot of information for those of you who do spend time thinking about the lines and maybe putting some wagers on the line and trying to make some money. And if you weren't using mybookie.ag to do that before, you should be now. It's the best way to make your money or play with maybe money that you won on the Super Bowl a few weeks ago, maybe money that you've been winning throughout this season. If you're not using MyBookie, you should be keeping your role alive right there at mybookie.ag.
Yeah, a lot of people assume that because the NFL and football season is over, that there's nothing left to bet on. That's not true. There's plenty of NBA action every night. There's NHL games. Heck, you could probably even bet on the Winter Olympics. But at the same time, what you already have is an advantage because you're listening to the Locked On Podcast Network. So you already know exactly what's going on with each and every NBA team. You have more information and you care more about the average fan. So now just all you have to do is to get on the action and bet the lines at MyBookie.
So why MyBookie? MyBookie is the industry-leading online sportsbook, and its players enjoy the fastest payouts in the business when they win. That's a huge plus.
We can't bet on NBA games ourselves because we cover the league. That would be a slight conflict of interest, but that doesn't mean we don't want to.
If I did, I'd use my bookie. And I hope that I can live vicariously through the listeners who do end up using my bookie.
Yes, we absolutely urge you, make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay, no hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else.
So sign up today, and that way you could score an instant 50% bonus on your first deposit. That means if you join with $100, you'll get $150 of bankroll to play with, for instance. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer.
That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA at MyBookie.ag. Play, win, get paid.
David and I are going to get to our spotlight performances here later on, but we got one Twitter question that we want to get to. Usually we do multiple, but we've got one because I think we're going to spend quite a bit of time on this. Jake tweets in with the hashtag AskLOHeat. Who's at fault for these second half meltdowns? Seriously, there has to be an explanation. So we dove in. Look, we've talked about these second half meltdowns quite a bit. We've mostly talking about how they are happening, right? Just the fact that they're happening. We've got some hypotheses about what that might be, but Spoelstra after the game had this quote that I want to read, and I really think it kind of it sounds like coach speak, but it does really speak to what is happening here. And so here's the quote: "We're closer than it looks right now, but that's our margin of error. Also, we're built different than some of the top teams in both conferences. We have to play to an identity consistently. We need multiple contributors in the same game. That's how we're built. We're capable of getting over this hump, and I believe we will." And look, yeah, we've talked about that a lot, right? The fact that the Heat don't have one superstar player. They don't have LeBron. They don't have Durant. They don't have James Harden that they could just say, hey, here's the rock. Go score.
Right. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing right there. You know, when he says that they don't have much of a margin of error, that's absolutely the case. You need, like as he says, nine players to chip in their customary 10 to 15 points per game, or else Miami just doesn't have a chance to win. And unfortunately, you had too many guys that weren't scoring at a high level. Josh Richardson and Just Winslow only combined for 9 points. You know, Bam Adebayo only had 3 points. Wayne Ellington, a guy who the team relies on so completely, only had 8 points on 2 of 9 shooting. So when you have those performances throughout the game, It sets Miami too far back, and they don't have, like you said, that superstar player who can take over a game. Look, I hate to go back to it because it was a difficult loss, but we saw the power of a superstar player in James Harden when he dominated Miami last week. Like, just his ability to take over the game, to get to the free throw line whenever he wanted to shift whatever was taking place. That's what defines a superstar. Miami doesn't have that player. They need everybody to pitch in and contribute, and unfortunately, they just didn't get enough people to do so. So that's a big problem. I also took a look at some of the – well, they mentioned these statistics during the game last night, so I think it's worth sharing with our listeners. Okay. 16 games decided by only single digits. That's the longest streak in Heat history. All these games have been very close, but either they were like, you know, Toronto, where they had to come back from a deficit and still fell short, or in the case against Philadelphia, where they squandered a big lead. Either way, 16 games decided by only single digits, 16 straight games. The last 21 of the 22 games decided by 10 points or less, and they're 12-8 in games decided by 5 points or less. So clearly, like Eric Spoelstra said, they're very close, they're contending, but something isn't working well. And unfortunately, it's just the fact that they don't have the kind of roster built to allow those kinds of leads. Look, we saw during the Big Three era, Heat fans remember this, it didn't matter if there was a double-digit lead or a deficit. It didn't matter if there was a 20-point deficit. Why? Because you had three of the best players on the planet who could change that narrative in within 5 minutes. Yeah, that's all it took. You can see that with the Golden State Warriors currently. The third quarter, they might be down 20 points, and you know what? They never sweat it. They don't care. They know they can come back and win this game easily, even though there's a large margin of defeat at this point. But Miami just doesn't have that kind of superstar power.
And it really shows like just how precarious their record in close games were. As in the beginning of the season, we kind of kept harping on the fact that the Heat were able to close out these games, and we gave them credit, and rightfully so. You know, you don't want to just say a streak is based on just, you know, a make or miss league type thing. Yeah, luck and things like that. Look, they showed a certain amount of mental fortitude to stay in those games and find ways to win, and they do deserve credit for that. But You know, it also shows that they don't have a bona fide scorer. They don't have a guy like that they can just rely on to go get buckets. And a lot of times it just does come down to whether or not those three-pointers are going in or not. I mean, there's a reason why Wayne Ellington right now is per on-off stats, their highest the player with the highest offensive rating on the team during the fourth quarter, right? It's because he is Miami's three-point shooter. He is their scorer. I've said this a million times, but it is incredible and just kind of says a lot about this team that Wayne Ellington is their most important offensive player in the second halves of these games. I think another part about this is that given that they don't have a guy who can just sort of you could put in isolation and just say go score, you know what I mean? They don't have a method to easy offense. They just don't. They have to work really, really hard for every bucket. And that throughout an 82 game season, that gets harder. That doesn't get easier. That just gets more difficult throughout the rigors of an 82 game season. And what's not making it easier for them is that while the Heat do play pretty good, or they play a top 10 defense in the league right now, they're not. Their defense a lot of times does not lead to offense. They are last in the league in transition points per possession. That's according to cleaningtheglass.com. And that just makes it harder. I mean, you'd hope that maybe Josh Richardson or Justice Winslow could force more steals and get out into transition, but the Heat just don't do a lot of that, and so that just makes it harder too because they're not getting those easy buckets.
Is it maybe an oversimplification, but does it feel a little bit like the kind of grit and grind offense that used to define Memphis for so many seasons? Is that what you think Miami is emulating to an extent? I mean, they certainly want to keep the pace slower, and you're right that they milk every last second out of every possession. So it's definitely a slow pace game, which is why Miami takes less shots than any other team in the league. But I mean, it seems like it always takes them 20 seconds before they can get a shot off. I mean, yeah. I know they're looking for the right shot. I know everybody touches the ball. They swing it very well. When they're engaged, when they're knocking down those shots, it looks beautiful. Unfortunately, they just don't have the kind of shooters that you can rely on to consistently knock down those shots.
I think two things would help immediately, and that would be maybe a larger focus on creating steals on defense. Maybe having, I don't know, maybe instructing Winslow and Richardson to go higher than the screen on and just invade those passing lanes a little bit, and as opposed to just playing as conservatively as they do. And they play conservatively, by the way, to limit three-point shooting of the opponent, and that makes sense. But I don't know, maybe take more chances defensively, and maybe that and on balance that will create more easy looks on offense in the second half. The second thing is, you know, more pick and roll. Something that the Heat kind of gotten away with, and they've started doing it more even in these last three games with Dwayne Wade. I think if you incorporate that pick and roll between him and Hassan Whiteside, specifically, Whiteside is so big and so athletic in his own right. Like, you know, we blame him for a lot of things, and he deserves a lot of blame for a lot of things a lot of times. Yeah. But one thing he can do is get to the drive to the rim hard, catch lobs, and make easy dunks. And I think that's another thing that the Heat need to do. I thought they got away from their pick and roll game, specifically against Philadelphia, in a game where Joel Embiid was not in the game, right? Yeah, I mean, I thought that that was a blown opportunity by them, and I don't know who's to blame. I'd have to go back and watch it again, but I'd like to see maybe more Wade-Whiteside pick and rolls now that they've added Wade, and maybe start incorporating that as a staple play in the offense.
I don't think they shared the floor a lot, to be honest with you. I'm trying to think back on it. I don't recall any time where they really shared too many minutes on the floor. Now, look, I know we didn't discuss this ahead of time, but I feel like our listeners are probably a little curious as to whether or not this is even a possibility. Well, we've heard some reports that Chris Bosh is still interested in making an NBA return. You talk about extending the defense out a little bit, running pick and roll situations. I know a power forward center who would be perfect in these kinds of situations. Any thought about adding Chris Bosh back to the roster? Oh. You know, we're on this thing with Dwayne Wade here. You know, everybody's so happy that Wade's back in town. Would it close the book perfectly to bring back Chris Bosh as well?
Yeah, but they can't because cap hit. Well, the cap hit would immediately that cap hit that they got the amnesty on would immediately go back. So he could go anywhere, but the Heat would be screwed in any case, and they can't sign him back.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I totally.
But he would help. I mean, he would be a phenomenal addition to this roster if he were healthy. But we could we could dive into that at another time maybe. But let's get to our spotlight players next. But first, a quick reminder to make sure that you are subscribed to Locked On Heat. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, as well as now on Spotify.
Yeah, subscribing is the best way. We know most of our listeners are probably subscribers, but if not, please do so. Let other people know that they should support the show by subscribing. Another way you can do so is by going onto our Patreon page, as we've talked about in the past. Just leave us a review on iTunes. It always increases our ranking and helps other Heat fans discover the show. If anybody's looking for a podcast about the Heat, this is the one they'll turn to. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer. Every show, every NBA and NFL team has their own show. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, it's time for these spotlight players, spotlight performances. You and I struggled a bit before we started recording here, trying to decide who we wanted to talk about. But who did you end up deciding on?
Yeah, it's not so much a spotlight, kind of as a highlight of doom or something like that, perhaps. I finally settled on Goran Dragic. Finished with 16 total points. I'm sorry, 18 total points on 6 of 14 shooting. Got to the line 6 times and went 4 of 6 from the line. 2 of 5 from 3-point range. 4 assists. Not a bad game from Dragic, but what was particularly alarming for him was the fact that he just wasn't a competent scorer in the second half. He finished with 18 points, like I said. 16 of those came in the first half, only 2 in the second. So that was a particularly glaring disparity.
Yeah, and I think part of Goran Dragic's game right now is we've seen this quite a bit, right, where he's kind of on in the first half and off in the second half.
Right. And in Toronto, it was the third quarter, though. That was the thing.
That's true.
Very weird. Very, very weird. You can't ever quite predict when he's going to go off. Maybe he just doesn't have the kind of endurance for 48 minutes. I don't know. There's a lot to digest there.
I think part of it is just the overall execution of the offense. You know, I think it's easier to execute your offense early in a game. You know, mm-hmm. You've got your game plan. You've reviewed it in the locker room before the game, before tip-off, and you go out there and execute. But the end of games really starts to mimic more of like what happens in a playoff scenario. You're relying a lot more on your staple plays, isolation scoring, and things like that. I've got some numbers here on Goran Dragic about his isolation scoring last year versus this year. Last year, he was in the 84th percentile of isolation scores. This year, he's in the 53rd. I mean, there's a significant drop off there, and we can go into a lot of the different reasons why that might be, but mostly it's just his field goal percentage. I mean, he was shooting 48% on isolation plays last year and 36% on isolation plays this year. Now, he doesn't ISO a whole lot. We know that just from watching the Heat. The eye test bears that out. Yeah. But it does sort of speak to he isn't, even though he's an all-star this year, he isn't as efficient as he was last year, just on a scoring basis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Who was your spotlight player of the game?
I've got James Johnson. Similar kind of game to Goran Dragic, tale of two halves there. 22 points for the game, 13 of which came in the first half. Did start 5 of 5 from the field in the game. And, you know, if you're looking for a silver lining this month so far in February, where Miami just has not been playing all that well, it's James Johnson, who has been playing really well. You would hope that would resulting in some wins for the team.
Right.
But James Johnson having struggled really hurt this team because he's such a major player on the roster, and just sort of his role as the glue guy who facilitates at the point forward position, but also a guy who they rely on to score quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because he is such a physical presence, he has the ability to go out and score. I mean, there's not a whole lot of guys on this team who can ISO, who can go one-on-one. James Johnson is one of their best bets, especially with Deion Waiters out for the season.
Yeah.
So if he's going like he was, especially at the start of the game, again, like I said, 5 of 5, he had a nice hook shot there, able to create his own looks a lot of times. If he's going, that's going to help Miami going forward.
Yeah, and creating looks for others too. He finished with 5 assists on the night, mm-hmm. So clearly he was getting everybody engaged. It looked like he was at the very best of his game yesterday. It might have been, I think, as Eric Reed said, the best game of this season for James. Certainly looked very, very good. And unfortunately, it just goes back to that same point that Eric Spoelstra brought up in his post-game speech, that, you know, they just don't have the kind of roster built around somebody or around one player being able to take over. And you know, if a guy like James has a good night, They still need everybody else to contribute at a high level. Unfortunately, they did not. So that's unfortunately why they can't result in as many victories as they'd like. You know, it's still good to see Johnson playing as well as he has, because I think he took a lot of unnecessary attacks from the fan base over the last few weeks. You know, I think he was struggling a little bit in fourth quarters. It looked like he wasn't exactly always engaged, and he made some bad passes that may or may not have cost the team a win here and there. So there were struggles there, but I think we've seen the very best of him over the last few games, and I'm hoping that will carry over through the All-Star break.
And we should mention, because I think on the last show or another show this week, we sort of talked about Wade and James Johnson not really having a chemistry. Yes. It looked like they had a conversation or did something against Philadelphia, because they had a couple of plays where they had some nice two-man action there, and they're trying to get both of each other involved in the same play, and that seems like they were taking a step forward there. So that was a good sign. Also, another note, Luke Babbitt finally got some run, mostly playing at small forward, which I thought was interesting. He scored 6 points on 2 of 3 three-point shot attempts, and he did that in 9 minutes of action. And we were talking earlier, and I'm just sort of thinking about this now, about things that Miami might be able to sort of jigger to revamp their second half offense. I wonder if, especially with Kelly Olynyk injured, and depending on when he comes back, but as long as he's out, I wonder if playing James Johnson at center and doing a super small lineup would sort of help, especially because with the addition of Dwayne Wade, they have so many guards who can really do stuff. I mean, and Luke Babbitt, who has experience playing the stretch four, do you go out there during these scoring ruts? Maybe to sort of jazz up the offense at the start of the fourth quarter, which it always seemed like there was a 4-minute stretch between against Philadelphia between in the last minute of the third quarter and the first 3 minutes of the fourth quarter where Miami didn't score. And this is happening a lot during that time. Do you maybe at the start of the fourth quarter is going like super small with James Johnson at center, Babbitt at the stretch four, and then, you know, Richardson, Wade, and Dragic, or you know, Richardson, Ellington, and Dragic, or something like that? It might be worth considering, especially while they're down one front court player.
It's a great concept. I think, unfortunately, then you wind up risking aggravating Hassan Whiteside further. Yeah. You can't get Bam Adebayo out there as much as you'd like to. And I think Olynyk was probably going to be back after the All-Star break, so we assume that he'll be back out there soon. I mean, we're looking at this in a vacuum, and we say, yeah, he absolutely needs to make a quick change like that just to kind of restart something. But at the same time, there is a trickle-down effect for any change that he makes. And unfortunately, it could wind up being a very divisive one. So I think Spoelstra probably has a better pulse of what's going on than most of us do. And so he's probably has his reasons for not going with that super small lineup, although it's worked effectively in spots this season. So, you know, it'd be nice to see it out there, especially if it leads to a win. But then there's a risk involved as well.
All right. Before we shut this thing down, we do want to take a moment to just reflect on the tragedy that happened at Stoneman Douglas yesterday. We know we are Locked On Heat, therefore a lot of our fan base is based in South Florida, and where this happened yesterday afternoon. And just from a personal note, look, I went to Taravella High School, and Stoneman Douglas was our rival high school. They were 10 minutes down the street. We played football games there. We used to chant Duck Fuglis at those games, and it was all obviously in good fun. But that was a school that I knew really well, and I knew a lot of people that went to that school. Of course, not people that were affected necessarily yesterday, but I there's a relationship there. And that was a scary moment, and I'm sure it was a scary moment for a lot of you people listening who maybe grew up in the same area where I grew up. Near Stoneman Douglas. And look, I went to school not even a 10-minute drive from Stoneman Douglas in high school. I went to college at UCF, just minutes from where the tragedy at the Pulse nightclub happened a couple years ago. Neither of those areas are high crime areas. No, you never think that, you know, you see it on the news and you never think that sort of thing is going to happen near you, but it can. And it doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter what you think your area is, or maybe you think you live in an affluent area or a nice place, and that sort of thing would never happen to you. I'm telling you, I never thought this would happen near Coral Springs, Florida. I never thought it would, and look, it did. And that could have easily have been Taravella in 2008. You know, it could have just as easily been there, because nothing's changed between basically Columbine and now. And we don't get political on this show, but something's got to give and something's got to change. And I'm just sick of it. And I'm sick of it happening near me. I'm sick of it happening in our country. And I just wanted to take a moment and just kind of, you know, pay the respect to the people who were affected by what happened yesterday, but also say, like, look, a lot of our listeners, a lot of you right now listening, live in Florida, have an impact on the elections that happen there, have an impact on who has a say in our government. And I ask that this be, next time that you are voting for anything or you are writing a letter to your congressman or whatever it might be, that this is first and foremost on your mind, because this has got to stop and you can affect it. Ricky Rubio didn't care. Not Ricky Rubio.
Marco Rubio
didn't care. Ricky Rubio is a great guy. Marco Rubio voted to make it so that, you know, AR-15 rifles could still be out there. And we need to make some changes here. And that's all I'm gonna say about that for now.
Yeah, that's well said. You know, even if we personally didn't have any kind of connection to Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, you know, currently, I know you had one in the past. I think, you know, as humans, as people, as Floridians, whatever you might want to say, we're all connected in that way. So one tragedy affects us all. And it's the kind of thing that we need to consider when we make our decisions about who runs this country and who runs for office. And I think, you know, so much of it has become almost like a game to see whether or not a certain celebrity will be a good person to run this country, you know, from Donald Trump to Dwayne The Rock Johnson to Oprah Winfrey. But the reality is that we need actual leaders in place who will be able to stand up to corporations and lobbyists from the NRA and to tell them that they don't care about their millions of dollars of donations, because it's more important to save the lives of our children. We shouldn't live in a world where our children can't go to school. I never went to school thinking that my life is in jeopardy. There isn't a child in this country who doesn't think that every day. And that's a tragedy. They have had to go to school and learn about what to do in lockdown situations. That should even be taught is a tragedy. This isn't duck and cover like it was in the 1930s and early 40s during World War II. There was no fear of an atomic bomb being dropped there that would soon pass. This is a very realistic threat that impacts all of our children. And so the future of this country depends on having people who can make the right decisions. So I'm glad you said something, and I hope that all of our listeners, whether you're from Florida or elsewhere, please consider that in the upcoming elections.
Absolutely. For now, that's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with our All-Star Weekend preview. Thank you to mybookie.ag. Your hookup for all of your betting needs. Go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and get a bonus on top of that first deposit that you put in. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions or comments for our recaps, like today, using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.